This morning, in a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court struck down a key provision of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, the formula which determines what areas must get federal permission before changing their voting laws. Joining us now is the nation's Ari Berman. He's been following the case and is the author of Herding Donkeys, The Fight to Rebuild the Democratic Party and Reshape American Politics. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hi.
Hi, Leonard. Thanks for having me back.
As this case was being considered, many analysts were talking about Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, which allows the federal government to require pre-approval for changes to election laws in certain states and municipalities. Why did the majority go after Section 4, which deals with how that pre-approval is determined?
Well, this was the easiest way for them to strike down Section 5, because Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act is how states are covered under Section 5. So if you get rid of Section 4, you're basically getting rid of Section 5. There was no need to actually strike down Section 5, because the only way that Section 5 is operable is if Congress goes and rewrites Section 4, which the court knew, I think, very well that Congress probably won't be able to do anytime soon.
So Section 5, which is often described as the teeth of the Voting Rights Act, has just been rendered toothless?
Yes, it's effectively dead.
Is this a landmark decision, do you think?
It really is a landmark decision because, as you mentioned, Section 5 was the most important part of the Voting Rights Act because it covered those states like Alabama with the worst history of voting discrimination. And it did two really important things. It forced them to clear their changes with the federal government before they took effect to stop future discrimination. But it also said to the states, the burden is on you to prove that your voting changes are not discriminatory. Now that's reversed. If groups want to challenge voting changes that they believe are discriminatory, they now have to go through a lengthy process after these laws are put into effect, and they have to prove that the changes are discriminatory, which is much more difficult to win in a court.
And as you said, the Supreme Court has, in effect, sent this law back to Congress, but the Voting Rights Act has been reauthorized by large congressional majorities a number of times since 1965, with major Republican support in 2006. Do you think that the political map has changed all that much since 2006?
It really has changed quite a bit since 2006. Once the Voting Rights Act got going, it gained momentum in Congress. So it was reauthorized four times in 1970, 1975, 1982, and 2006. And each time it was signed by a Republican president, not because they necessarily loved the Voting Rights Act, but because there was a bipartisan consensus within Congress for the Voting Rights Act. But what's happened since 2006 is the Republican Party has moved to the right. It's become, I think, objectively, if you look at the map, more conservative, more white, and more Southern. That means that the very people that are playing larger roles in the Republican Party are the types of people that have always been opposed to the Voting Rights Act. Now, they didn't have enough votes to kill it in 2006, but does that mean that they're going to take it up? For example, the House Judiciary Committee would have to first pass any new type of Voting Rights Act. So if a bill that was overwhelmingly reauthorized in Congress in 2006 doesn't pass muster with the Supreme Court now, I think a lot of members of Congress are going to say, not only do we not necessarily want to fix this, but even if we did quote-unquote fix it, would the Supreme Court like our fix?
Well, many people have complained that the law, by going after only specific areas of the country, has been rather biased, that the Voting Rights Act really could apply to places all over the country. Why was it designed so specifically?
Well, parts of the Voting Rights Act do apply to the whole country, such as Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, in which legal changes could be challenged after they're put into effect, but then you have to prove that they're discriminatory. But Section 5 was always envisioned as a really extraordinary solution to an extraordinary problem, which is that we passed the 15th Amendment a long time ago. It wasn't enforced for basically almost 100 years, so thus there needed to be some sort of solution that would deal with the states with the worst history of voting discrimination. And those states, the Alabamas, Mississippi's, Georgia's, et cetera, mostly in the South, those were the states where Section 5 was envisioned for, this idea that they would have to pre-clear their changes with the federal government. States like Idaho, for example, didn't need to have that because voting discrimination wasn't a problem there. So the idea was to really take the states of the old Confederacy, subject them to special scrutiny, and what we've seen subsequently is that those states remain the worst actors when it comes to voting discrimination. Since 2010 alone, six of those nine states that are fully covered by Section 5, all in the South, have passed new voting restrictions. So clearly, voter suppression is an ongoing thing in many of these places.
We're talking about the Supreme Court's 5-4 decision this morning that strikes down Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 with Ari Berman, who writes for The Nation, is the author of a number of books. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Ludit Lopate. Did anything in the majority opinion jump out at you?
Not really. I mean, this is kind of what we expected. We thought that they would stop just short of overturning Section 5, leaving a small window open to Congress to potentially go back here, thus preventing a huge conflict between the different branches of government. So it really was the most skillful way that I think the Roberts Court could have killed Section 5. The opinion didn't really surprise me. John Roberts wrote the opinion in an earlier Voting Rights Act case in 2009 where he basically hinted that he was going to do this in a future case. Justice Ginsburg's dissent, one of many dissents she's had this term, I might add, was very strong. It's going to be a very controversial decision going forward, not just in terms of what Congress is going to do, but also in terms of how Congress views the Supreme Court. The fact that the court took a law that's been reauthorized overwhelmingly four times by Congress and then said to Congress, you didn't really do your job, that potentially could create some conflict between the branches of government going forward.
In her dissent, Justice Ginsburg wrote, hubris is a fit word for today's demolition of the Voting Rights Act. Why do you think she chose the word hubris?
Well, I think she chose it for a few different reasons. Number one, I think she believed that the majority opinion was blind to history. They didn't understand the need for Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, why it's continued to be so important in stopping second and third generation forms of voter suppression. And I also think she believed that the court was really overreaching by striking down, as I mentioned, something that had been reauthorized four times by the Congress. Not only on the merits did she believe that the court shouldn't have reached this decision, but she also, I think, believed that it set a very bad precedent going forward.
Haven't there been other approaches to voter suppression in recent times?
Well, absolutely. And Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act itself is an insufficient remedy because we've seen, for example, states like Ohio and Pennsylvania that aren't covered by Section 5 begin to pass things like voter ID laws that disproportionately affect minority voters. But I think, if anything, that's an argument for going back and saying, hey, maybe we should expand Section 5, figure out a way to have more protections. But what John Roberts was saying is, if you write a new version of Section 4 to cover states under Section 5, it has to be more narrow than the current drafting. So what the Supreme Court is moving towards is a future where there's fewer remedies to combat racial discrimination in voting, ironically at the very time that racial discrimination in voting is expanding across the country.
Well, Roberts wrote that, quote, the conditions that originally justified these measures no longer characterize voting in the covered jurisdictions. Is he saying that those areas have cleaned up their acts?
Yeah, he's basically saying, as he did in a 2009 decision, that the South has changed. And I think the South has changed a lot. But, I mean, you talk to people that work on voting rights cases down there, and they're having a tremendous amount of problems in the South right now. We've seen, for example, laws in Texas and South Carolina blocked by federal courts under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act as recently as last year. So this isn't ancient history. This is something that's very much part of the current conversation around voting. And I think that's why Ginsburg so strenuously dissented, because it's not like this was just something that was drafted in 1965 and has sat on a shelf. This is a law that has continued to block voting discrimination as recently as the last election.
But Congress could have updated the formula in the various times that they have reauthorized it, as recently as 2006. It chose not to.
Absolutely, but there was no really easy way to update the formula. There was no easy fix. Trying to change the states that were covered probably would have wrecked the entire reauthorization in 2006. No one has come up with a better formula, for example, for covering places like Ohio and Pennsylvania. You can't pass a law that says, well, any time a Republican is elected and they pass voter suppression efforts, or a Democrat for that matter, that state is covered. There has to be a long history here, which is how they drafted the VRA initially to cover these nine states with the worst history of voting discrimination, and some counties in other places that have had these problems. So it'll be very interesting. The Congress can almost do nothing right now. I mean, it seems like the most they can do is name post office at this very moment. So it's going to be, I think, very difficult for them to go back and rewrite to satisfy the court such a major civil rights law.
The president issued a statement saying that he was deeply disappointed in the ruling. How important was the Voting Rights Act to his reelection last year?
Well, I think it was important in the grand scheme of Barack Obama. I mean, I think there's people who have fought for the Voting Rights Act, like Congressman John Lewis, who was beaten in the Bloody Sunday protest in Selma that led to the passage of the Voting Rights Act, that believed there would be no Barack Obama without the Voting Rights Act, that there wouldn't have been the evolution of minority voting power that we see now to have an Obama. You also look in 2008, Obama won states like Virginia and North Carolina that are covered by the Voting Rights Act. Many people believe that states in the South are changing demographically, states like Texas, for example, that are covered by the VRA, in a way that they'll become more competitive. So I think one of the reasons that we're seeing so many fights over voting right now is the fact that we have an African-American president, and we have a growing demographic shift in which minority voters are playing a larger and larger role in the electoral process. So with or without Section 5, I think we're going to be continuing to see new voter suppression efforts to try to stop demographic change going forward.
Justice Roberts cited census data showing that African American voter turnout now exceeds white turnout in five of the six states originally covered by the Voting Rights Act, and some of the places that were covered, the municipalities that were covered, like Shelby County, Alabama, which actually brought the case, came to resent the expense and indignity of having to get federal preclearance.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that they resented. I mean, many of these states never wanted to be covered by the Voting Rights Act in the first place. They didn't want the Voting Rights Act in the first place because they were the ones who were doing the kind of voter suppression. I mean, it's interesting that Shelby County, Alabama, challenged the Voting Rights Act because Shelby County, in many ways, is a poster child for why we need Section 5. Shelby County, one of the cities in Shelby County, a city, Calera, tried in 2008 to eliminate the only black city council district in this one town, and it was precisely under Section 5 that change was blocked, and that there is an African-American member of the city council now in Calera. So I think the people that argued this case, the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and the federal government, believe that Shelby County was a perfect poster child for the VRA. John Roberts had a different perspective. He looked, for example, at Mississippi, where you do have a very high minority voter turnout, for example, and he looked at voter registration statistics, which I think are somewhat misleading, because you take Mississippi, does have very high registration of black voters. It's also never elected an African-American candidate to statewide office. So, yes, there are more opportunities there, but the question is, has the promise of the VRA been fulfilled in these states? And I think many people would argue that it has not yet.
Ari Berman, thank you so much for being on our show.